Hello, everyone. This will be my final episode about the aftermath and effects of the crime world. My sexual past and my being completely single in every which way. We'll start with my being completely single in every which way. Easiest, then we get to the hardest. So, I have decided the biggest reason why I am completely single is that I pay the price for wisdom best as a solo living kind of person. I feel more best for the better as a solo living person. I think more best for the better as a solo living person. I question more best for the better as a solo living person. I hurt more best for the better as a solo living person. I heal more best for the better as a solo living person. And I do more best for the better as a solo living person. When I say hurt, I'm not talking about me hurting myself. I don't do that. I'm not talking about me hurting others. I don't do that. What I'm saying is that the expression growing pains is not just for adolescents. Growing pains will happen to us sometimes until the final seconds of our living, when we officially become deceased. I'm talking about healthy growing pains because that is what living out the true meaning of life is about. To me, the true meaning of life is for us all to be well-rounded, well-balanced, well-adjusted, and well-unified beings when it comes to human beings, when it comes to animals, when it comes to insects, when it comes to nature, when it comes to architecture, when it comes to life, the planet Earth, and the universe. And the more I understand, the more pain and difficulty I experience. The more I know, the more imperfection I see around me. And the more I observe, the more evil becomes evident to me. When I talk about pain and difficulty, I'm not talking about self-sabotage. I'm not talking about cruelty to others. When you choose to live a life of wisdom, which means paying the price for wisdom, it means that not every life lesson you learn will be pleasant. Some will be unpleasant. I've learned more unpleasant life lessons than pleasant life lessons, but the unpleasant life lessons are actually for my good. I'm not talking about what an abuser will teach their abuse victim. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the zigzagging roller coaster that healing is, in terms of learning that as an extraordinary person, I can't date a lot of people. Because the pickings are slim to none. I can't have sex with a lot of people because the pickings are slim to none. I'll take it a step further. I can't date a lot of people because the pickings are slimmer than slim to none. I can't have sex with a lot of people because the pickings are slimmer than slim to none. People that are true friends in life, the pickings are slimmer than slim to none. People that would be excellent chosen family for me, the pickings are slimmer than slim to none. There are a lot of business deals I cannot sign. There's a lot of millions and billions that I cannot make because of moral excellence. Oftentimes, I have to have difficult conversations with other people and myself. There are some people I can't have in my life. If I find a partner, there are certain people I have to help them not to have in their lives. And there are certain people that have to help me not to have in their lives. Let's say that partner of mine has children. We have to keep certain people from us and the children. There are certain people from my past that cannot re-enter my life. There are certain people I can't talk to. There are certain people that shouldn't be in my phone. There are certain people that shouldn't be in my emails. There are certain people that shouldn't be in my video chat accounts. There are certain people that I cannot connect with over social media. And being extraordinary, sometimes there's deep suffering. Sometimes there's persecution. Sometimes there's healthy deprivation. And sometimes there's hard work. Sometimes there's smart work. Deprivation in this case means not living a life of unnecessary excess. The vanity, the greed, the hubris, the pridefulness, the vainglory, the hybris. Oftentimes, being extraordinary means that sometimes there's social rejection, sometimes there's public ridicule, sometimes there's career derailment. Sometimes I'm uncomfortable. The discomfort is real as an extraordinary person. Sometimes there's certain moments where I have to tell myself the truth about being extraordinary. These hard truths, these rough realities of being extraordinary. There's a lot of people I can't have as friends. There's a lot of people I can't have as colleagues and co-workers. There's a lot of people I can't have as close friends. There's a lot of people I can't have as best friends. There's a lot of people I can't have as small talk buddies. There's a lot of people that I can't have as talk buddies. There's a lot of people that I can't have as acquaintances. There's a lot of people I can't have as associates. There's a lot of people that I can't have as neighbors. There's a lot of people I can't have as business partners. There's a lot of people that I can't be around. There's a lot of people that can't be in my home. There's a lot of people that can't call my work phone. There's a lot of people that can't text my work phone. There's a lot of people that can't call and text my cell phone. There's a lot of people that can't leave me voicemails. You know, there's a lot of people that I can't watch on the media. There's a lot of media content I cannot view, I cannot consume, I cannot read. And there's a lot of people that I can't eat with. There's a lot of people I can't drink with. There's a lot of people I can't travel with. There is a lot of people I can't confide in. There's a lot of people that I can't glance at. There's a lot of people I can't look at. There's a lot of people I can't wave at. There's a lot of people I can't hug. There's a lot of people I can't handshake. And here is also what is true about being extraordinary. Because a lot of people don't think enough about this. Often, as an extraordinary person, I can't always protect myself from pain. I'm not saying be a pushover doormat. What I'm saying is, when you're extraordinary, often you have to make hard choices and hard decisions, which have built-in pain inherently. I can't always save my physical life from death, discomfort, and uneasiness. Because we all die. Sometimes we squirm. And sometimes we're not going to always feel good. I'm not saying engage in self-destructivity. What I'm saying is that in life, there's certain inevitabilities of realities that will happen whether we like it or not. I have to pledge my whole existence to servant leadership, the realest commitment ever. If I always la-la-land myself and other people in life, that causes me heart death, soul death, mind death, memories death. And then I remember that there are certain other realities of being extraordinary. When you're extraordinary, you have countless crosses to bear that you have to carry with other extraordinary people. That means that we can never turn back, and there's always the risk of human alienation, and there's always the risk of losing materialism for moral excellence. When I say human alienation, it means that some people are going to be at odds with you because you always want to do what's right. And I want to say this, we can't always be protected from pain. We can't always be protected from discomfort. We can't always be protected from discomfort. Sometimes when extraordinary, great temptations can come for those who love us and seek to protect us. Sometimes, often our most difficult temptations come from those who are only trying to protect us from discomfort. And when extraordinary, that's what happens. Often when extraordinary, we are suffering servants. Most of the time, a lot of people will not yet fully understand the kind of integrous trailblazers and integrous trendsetters that we come to be. Often as an extraordinary person, we have to resist the temptation of having the highest social or civic honors take the place of our callings and our giftings. Often as extraordinary people, we have to resist the temptation of accumulating on what we accumulating on earth, overwhelming us and engulfing us. And then, when you're an extraordinary person, we have to warn each other about the temptations we face as associates associating with each other. When we're extraordinary, we often have to tell each other, extraordinary people to other extraordinary people, don't expect fame and fortune, but mourning, hunger, dehydration, and attacks. We can't promote our personal interests to the detriment of ourselves and others. As extraordinary people, we have to be willing to give when others take, to love when others hate, to help when others abuse. As extraordinary people, we often have to do and say and think and feel what seems strange to the world. Often extraordinary people, we have to experience of hope and joy independent of outward circumstances. Often extraordinary people, the joy, the deepest form of happiness, we have to abide by moral excellence no matter what the cost. Often as extraordinary people, we have to combat being carbon copies of the world's selfishness, pride, and lust for power. We have to reflect the humility and self-sacrifice of moral excellence. As extraordinary people, we have to fight feeling tempted to feel important, proud, and possessive. And often as extraordinary people, we are teaching to show our concern for understanding. We are healing to show our concern for wholeness. And we are giving life lessons to show our concern for commitment. As extraordinary people, we do our best to heal inner sickness and not just outer sickness. We have to resist the attitude of let's be involved with each other just to receive money and power and that's it. Here are other truths. Moral excellence is not always easy or comfortable. Often moral excellence means great cost and sacrifice, with no earthly rewards nor earthly security. I may find that abiding by moral excellence causes me popularity, leisure time, treasured habits, relationships, events, environments, people, things, and situations. But while the cost of moral excellence is high, the value of abiding by moral excellence is even higher. Moral excellence is an investment that lasts for generations and yields credible rewards. It is possible that when you're moral excellent, you may end up jobless, you may end up homeless, you may end up underemployed, you may end up losing all your life insurance types, you may end up losing your vehicles, you may end up losing your cash, you may end up losing your bank accounts, you may end up losing your medical care, you may end up losing your retirement pension plans, you may end up blackballed and blacklisted from many parts of the world, you may end up on continental travel bans and island travel bans because of moral excellence. And I'll say this. I can't always think the thoughts I want to think. I can't always do the deeds I want to do. I can't always feel the emotions I want to feel. And I can't always say the statements I want to make. A lot of times, as a morally excellent person that's extraordinary, I have to make prophetic statements, do prophetic deeds, feel prophetic emotions, and think prophetic thoughts. And often, as the morally excellent person, I have to do what I don't want to do, say what I don't want to say, think what I don't want to think, and feel what I don't want to feel. Because the consequence is human pushback, human clapback, human blowback, human backlash. And human destructive criticism, human heckling, human trolling, and human setbacks, as well as human comebacks. Last thing I'll say is this. It is easier for me to experience all these rough realities of being extraordinary as a completely single person. There are some people that are in my biological family that I have to be morally excellent without them. I can't be morally excellent with everybody. I can't heal with everybody. I can't grow with everybody. I have to be on my guard against the yeast. Of bad element. As an extraordinary person, I can't spend all my energy seeking pleasure. I'm not against pleasure, nor am I saying that I should seek pain needlessly. I'm talking about the heroic effort needed to abide by moral excellence moment by moment, to do moral excellence even when the work is difficult and the future looks bleak. I can't have just curiosity moral excellence. I have to be of commitment to moral excellence. I can't just have admiration for moral excellence. I gotta have adoration for moral excellence. The morally excellent life is not a paved road to wealth and ease. And as extraordinary people, we're constantly turning the world's perspective upside down with talk of first and last, saving and preserving and losing. Rejecting moral excellence may help some people escape shame for the time being, but it will guarantee a legacy of shame later. And as extraordinary people, as our inner vision improves and allows us to see and understand moral excellence better, we will also be able to see and understand evil better. We would be overcome by its horror if we did not have moral excellence with us to take us through it safely. We can't be afraid to confront evil and suffering, no matter how ugly or horrible. Moral excellence goes with us. Whatever we have on earth is only temporary. It cannot be exchanged for our legacy. If we work hard at getting what we want, we might eventually have a so-called pleasurable life, but in the end, we will find it hollow, shallow, empty, meaningless, pointless, and chasing after the wind. We can't be obsessed with the world of pleasure centered on possessions, position or power, because ultimately worthless, valueless, and there's price tags that we have to place on ourselves. This is not self-hatred. This is submission to moral excellence. We have to lose our arrogant determination to screw people over, to screw the oppressed over, to be of exploiters and exploitation. The image of carrying our cross is to illustrate the ultimate submission required of us as adherents to moral excellence. We can reject moral excellence now and be rejected by historians, or we can accept moral excellence now and be accepted by historians then. Sometimes we have to tell people not to tell anyone about us, because they need more instruction about the morally excellent work we would accomplish through the highs and the lows of being morally excellent. Last statement I'll say about being extraordinary, then I'll get to my sexual past. When we're morally excellent people, we pass from reassuring experience of the presence of moral excellence to a frightening experience of evil. The beauty we had just seen must have made the ugliness seem even uglier. But I am best at handling all these things I'm saying to you as a completely single individual. Losing is gaining, and gaining is losing. That's why my singleness best complements this path of extraordinary moral excellence that I have joyfully chosen for myself. Now let's talk about my sexual past. So let's get into it. I have truly learn that I was, and these are new details, before I respond to that, being extraordinary means that I have to at times legally protect myself from smear campaigns, libel, slander, defamation, lies, deceit, scandals, and schemes. Now, I'm going to talk to you about my sexual past. So, I was having sex with brown collar women, military personnel. I was having sex with new collar women who develop technical and soft skills through non-traditional education paths. I had sex with green collar women, usually referring to women military personnel, but also referring to women workers in a wide range of professions relating to the environment and renewable energy. I was having sex with open collar women, refers to women workers who work from home via internet, likely freelancers. I was having sex with gold collar women, refers to young, low wage women workers who invest in conspicuous luxury. Alternatively, refers to highly skilled women professionals in high demand fields, such as women doctors, women lawyers, women engineers, women pilots, women scientists. These were some of the kinds of women I was having sex with. I was having sex with gray collar women. Workforce, when it comes to women, that is not classified in blue collar nor white collars, is occasionally used to describe elderly women individuals working beyond the age of retirement, as well as those occupations that women are in, incorporating elements of both blue and white collar. So, yes, these were guys women have sex with. Some were elderly. I was having sex with pink collar women. There's also a member of the women working class who performs in the service industry. They work in positions such as women waiters, waitresses, women retail clerks, women salesperson, certain unlicensed women assistive personnel, many other positions involving relations with people. So yes, in many other positions involving relations with people. So yes, these were the kinds of women I was sleeping with. I was having sex with blue collar women workers, who was also a member of the women working class who perform manual labor and earned hourly wages for some, or was paid piece rate for the amount of work done. I was having sex with white-collar women workers who were salaried professionals, typically referring to general office women workers in women management. I was having free sex with scarlet-collar women workers in the sex industry. I was having sex with black collar women, manual women laborers in industries in which women workers generally become very dirty, such as mining or oil drilling. I never had sex with women workers who were doing organized crime. Never have within that time period of my life. And I never will. I was having sex with red collar women, government workers of all types, derived from compensation received from Red Ink budget. No, I never had sex with women within the Communist Party in private companies as Communist Party officials. Never have, never will. I was having sex with no-collar women. Women artists and women free spirits who tended to privilege passion and personal growth over financial gain. Women who work but not for payment. So those ones I was sleeping with. Some of the women I was sleeping with back then were orange collar women. Women who got out of jail and turned over a new leaf. Women who used to be prison laborers, named for the orange jumpsuits commonly worn by women inmates. Meaning, when I started having sex with them, they left their life of crime. I'm not talking about murder. I'm not talking about being a stick-up artist. I'm saying these were the women who tended to be in jail for fighting men who were fighting them. I these were the kind of women that snapped, meaning they got tired of male misogynistic violence, so they fought back, but everybody got locked up. So that's what happened. And these prison labor women who were prison laborers was very minute in number. And women in the sex industry, that was small in number too. Wasn't a whole lot of them. It was a little bit more than a handful, a little bit more, but still very small. So yeah, these were the kind of women I was involved with. I'm not bragging, I'm just telling the truth. These were the designation of women workers by women color. And most of my sex partners were older women, 40s plus, 50 plus. There were some who were young adult women, and there were some who were elderly women. Most of my partners were white. The second amount were black. The third amount were Latinas. The fourth amount were Asians, and the fifth amount were Native Americans. The sixth amount were Middle Easterners. The seventh amount were islanders. I was sexually involved with all body types, all skin colors, and all personality classifications of women. Most of my sex partners were single women, single child-free women, and single mothers. The second amount were married, and the rest were, fiancés. A little bit were some or girlfriends of other guys and other women. Some of my partners were LGBTQI+. Most of my partners were cisgender heterosexuals. Most of my sex was protected. The rest were not. None of my partners had any infections or diseases. That's why I didn't have any diseases nor infections. I've been sexually involved with all hair types of women. Most of the women I was sexually involved with had long hair. The second set, short hair. And the third set, bald. A little bit wore wigs and weaves. The rest just wore natural hair. I was sexually involved with average height women the most. Short women the second, and tall women the third. And last thing I'll say about my sexual past is this. I had sex with curvy women the most. And slim thick the second, curvy big thick the third, and the rest of the sex with women, some had inverted triangle body types, pear body shapes, rectangle body types, rectangle body shapes, athletic body shapes, diamond body shapes, spoon body shapes, oval body shapes, apple body shapes, over apple body shapes, spoon body shapes, skinny body shapes, hourglass, apple shapes, pear triangle, P/E/A/R, ectomorphs in hips, bottom hourglass, top hourglass, straight or banana body shapes. Some were omniverts, ambiverts, introverts, extroverts. I would say the extroverts were the most I was sexually involved with. The second were the introverts. The third were the ambiverts and omniverts. That concludes that part of... That concludes the rest of my sexual past stories after I tell you that majority of the sex were in their homes. The rest of the sex was in sex clubs or public sex where people weren't there and didn't see us sneaking it in. Now let's finish up with the crime world, shall we? After I tell you that there were plenty of women I had sex with that were classified as big, beautiful women, I was intimate sexually with all races and ethnicities and nationalities of women. All of my sex was free. I never paid for sex in any kind of way. Now let's get to the crime world. You know, after I say that, I had sex with lean women too. Now let's get to the crime world. Okay, we can move on. So, when I look at that world I was in, to me that kind of world was a very hard-hitting, immeasurably hard-hitting world. Because what I do remember about that world is that they recruited elderly people to be a part of their crime crews. They didn't care about senior citizens and the need to revere them. It was more of, you got energy and stamina, come hustle with us and come be salaried workers by us. And so there are times where I was drug dealing, numbers running with old people, and they treated children and preteens and teenagers the same way. So I was drug dealing numbers running with children, preteens, and teenagers. And that we were all getting paid. And I remember they had a one-year-old sell drugs with them. The crime, one of the crime crews. Very little had infants and babies who they would have give people stuff like drugs and pay people, criminals, for doing dirt. That wasn't an everyday thing. That was something I saw once on each occasion. Children committing crimes, after a while that stopped. I would say by the third or fourth month, me being in the crime world, you didn't really see kids commit crimes. Or if they did, it had to be super duper hidden because the crime world was starting to get offended by children and crime. And some adults were getting killed and beaten and robbed because you had kids doing dirt. How did I stay as long as I did? They kept having me under the radar. Like, they would move me to other crime spots that really was easier for them to hide me in criminality. I would say I wasn't always in the crime world. There were a lot of times they gave me days off, so I didn't spend a whole lot of time in the crime world because of it. So that's what also made it easier for them to not be prosecuted because they had me in that world. So a lot of people want to know, how come your name is not as big as people they sorrowfully call street legends? I didn't spend a lot of time doing crime. I did not spend over a year doing crime. By month 6 or by month 12, between that time, I was out of that world. I remember in that world too, I was able to always having to pray before, during, and after I was forced to commit crimes with these crime crews. But I would do it silently. Last thing I'll say about the crime world, because after that, all my experience of crime officially be told, I'm just wrapping up, was that that life there is always a risk that if you become a criminal, that means that you will have to always be afraid of what you're wearing and what you're driving. Because I've seen a lot of people being beaten, robbed, and killed for their vehicles and for openly walking around with cash stacks in their pocket or backpacks. You know, when they say watch your pockets, watch your jewels, watch your jewels. Yeah, because I've seen people be robbed of those things. I've seen people get carjacked. I'm talking about they only would carjack luxurious vehicles. Regular vehicles, they wouldn't carjack them. And just be mindful of the fact that when they say watch for phonies, watch your homies, those are organized crime mottos. They say keep your enemies close. And if your enemy's close or your friend's close, those organized crime models. I've seen all these models lived out. In the crime world, when they talk about money over niggas, I've heard women say that. That means that dudes are getting exploited. I put the money first. That's how the dudes will come our way. Then, and this is uncomfortable to say. Guys talking about money over bitches. Notice, it was rough for me to say. That means that women are getting exploited. We put the money first, and the women will come our way. Because in their mind, women are dollar signs and currency coins. And when it came to the women, they saw men as dollar signs and currency coins too. I think I talked about the book, but let me give you new details of what I'm saying. I'm talking about the Amazon book. So, here's the new details of what I'm saying. I've heard men and women criminals say money over bullshit. So, MOB had two definitions. Well, as long as I don't get caught, I don't have the cops fucking with me. I don't have 5-0 bringing hell to my life. I've heard criminals say that. They also had another MON definition. Money over nerds, because in their mind, hey, we make the money, and they will say the money makes us, and I'd rather have cash than be a bookworm, because school don't pay you shit, but the streets make you feel like you are the shit. They say, man, school ain't shit. School ain't gonna never be shit. That's what they used to say. Now that I've told you all the stories from the crime world, my sexual past, my complete singleness, and my being extraordinary and being a public figure, All the stories have officially, finally, fully, totally, wholly, absolutely, definitely, positively been told. Nothing left unsaid. The traumatic parts of my past are 100% dead.